You're listening to C101.5 FM, The Hawk, from Mohawk College in Hamilton, Ontario. Hamilton's alternative.
You are listening to Bridging the Social Distance. My name is Jenny Mitchell, and I recorded this show here at CFRU, Guelph's campus and community radio station, as a means of creating a platform for us to share ideas and feelings and perspectives in the wake of this global pandemic that is COVID-19. I was afraid that people would get isolated or I would lose the opportunity to chat with my community and find out how everyone is doing, so I made this show. If you're listening and you would like to get involved or be interviewed, you can contact me at mobile@cfru.ca. I'd like to provide the disclaimer that these interviews were recorded at different points in time, so situations in some of these locations may have changed. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Francis Poirier, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. This interview was originally recorded on July 14th, 2020. So, to start with, could you introduce yourself for listeners?
I'm Francis Poirier. I'm 92. I don't know what else I can tell you.
Well, let's, you're 92. How about where were you born? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Middleport, Ontario, which is a little farming district. And my parents had a farm, and it's on what they call Highway 54, and it's along the Grand River.
Okay.
I was there till my teens when my family bought a general store in another little country village. So I live off and on there till I married.
Do you know, does Middleport still, I'm not familiar with Middleport. Is it still similar to what it was like growing up? Is it an area that has remained farming?
Well, mostly, but it is. It's still a little village. They have no longer have a store. It has a little Anglican church and a small village, and the rest is farm area around there.
What kind of farming did your family do?
Just general farming. Anything and everything.
Were you responsible with helping out on the farm?
Oh, a little, but we never had to. I had one sister. We never had to do barn work, or we didn't even have much of a garden, but no, not really much.
Can you tell me about your childhood? Do you have specific memories from back then in Middleport?
Well, really, it was very quiet compared to today. We made our own fun. I had an uncle who was just, I think, 5 months older than me, and my sister was a lot younger than me. So I spent most of my growing up with him, and I spent a lot of time at my grandparents because that's where he was. So we went to it was a one room at public school. It was one room with all the grades. They didn't call them grades then. And he could have gone a little ahead of me, but he waited until I was old enough to go when we went together.
Aww.
And, my grandparents had a lot of fruits like strawberry patches while we picked strawberries when the strawberries were on, and climbed trees. but quiet, really, when you think about it. We just made our own fun. Neighbors were very close, so
oh, yeah.
Did lots with them, yes.
How much freedom did you have when you were a kid for getting out and making your own adventures, sort of unsupervised?
We must have been very good because we didn't really have any. If we got into trouble, we heard of it. But no, I guess we knew our limit. You know, there was no comparison or anything then. So we were, I would say, normal, fairly good children.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's it's not so different in some ways. You know, like I have raspberries growing outside of my house in a tiny little strawberry patch, and I even climbed a tree last week. And so in some things never change.
We used to, I had my uncle and a cousin of his who was about the same age. And we used to climb trees to see who got the farthest.
Oh, no.
And really, we would climb trees till the top was just swinging back and forth.
I didn't go that far.
And we would go to my grandfather's barn, and when the what they call the mow, where they put their hay for the winter, there were great big wide beams in there. Mm. We used to run around those beams. Nobody ever fell, but I don't know why. But that was the kind of life we had. No.
That sounds very fun.
Yes, it was.
I have two young children, and the vision of them running around on beams is mildly terrifying for me as a mother, but it sounds like a good time.
And sometimes we had a rope and we would swing on the rope up there. Real boyish, I think.
Oh, I suppose, yeah. I guess you lived during a generation where there was maybe more distinguished roles, I guess, even as kids, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. And if I was at my grandmother's and she told us not to do something, we didn't do it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. That's neat that you had that close relationship with your grandparents, too, because of the parallel age with your uncle.
Yes. We were friends all our life. But he moved to BC, so it was just we saw each other occasionally.
Yeah. But
one thing I remember about it, when we were really little, they took a picture of us together. And every year we got a picture taken. And when we were parted, when we did make a trip to see one another, the first thing we had a picture taken.
Aw. Did you continue to see each other, like, fairly regularly despite?
Oh, I would say with BC, maybe every couple years.
Yeah.
And one of the, well, he ended up in a nursing home, but one of the last remembrances of him was my husband and I planned a trip to Thailand. And I told them. So his wife called and she said, who are you going with and when are you going and everything? And they come to Thailand with us.
That's amazing.
And we had a picture taken in one of the, it wasn't a rickshaw, but it was bigger than that. We had our last picture taken there.
Oh, what a beautiful thing to get to do together.
Yes.
I mean, it's hard. I don't, people who don't live in Canada, I don't think realize that BC is so far away for us that it might as well be another country in some ways,
absolutely.
You know?
Yes, I agree with you there.
But it's beautiful. Like, what a nice place to get the chance to visit. Really nothing like that around here.
Yes, that's for sure.
What part of BC did he move to?
Vancouver.
Okay. So you yourself, you said as a teen, you moved, your family started a general store?
Yes.
Was that near, still close by to Middleport?
Yes, it was, just a few miles.
Okay. Can you tell me about that? I don't know if you were responsible for helping out with the family business or not.
Oh, yes. But at that time, I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wasn't home much because then we didn't have school buses or any way to get, and I was 10 miles from Brantford, where the high school was. So for 1 year there, I worked for my board with in a home that the husband was in the service and or away anyway, and they had two small children. So I had to work for my board and go to collegiate.
Wow. What was the name of your high school in Brantford?
Brantford Collegiate.
Is it still there? Is it still the same? Wow.
Yes.
I forgot that was not uncommon back then to actually stay, like live where your high school is for a time.
And I never minded being away from home. So lots of times it'd be 2 and 3 weeks before my dad would come to pick me up for a weekend. I'd just stay there. And but I knew some people in Brantford. So then I could visit them.
Mm-hmm.
That was 1 year. And the next 2 years, I'm ahead of myself. My first 2 years of high school, I went from Middleport to Caledonia. Now, I don't know whether you know what that is.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
I went to Caledonia High School for 2 years, then that year with the lady. And then the next 2 years, I boarded with my aunt and uncle. So
okay.
That was easier.
Yeah. So you had 5 years of high school?
Yes.
Wow. That's kind of amazing.
I would have gone to university if I had, but nobody had any money. I like school.
Yeah. I understand. That's still something that stands in the way.
I got to correct. I only went 4 years.
Okay.
The last year I spent with my aunt and uncle, and then I got a job.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I boarded with them until I got married.
Wow.
And that was another 2 years, I guess. I was just 19 when I was married.
Can I ask how you met your husband?
Well, through a mutual friend. And the first night I was out with him, he took me to a wrestling match. But anyhow, so that was in November. And we were married the next June.
Wow, that's amazing. Can you tell me more about the wrestling match? I kind of want to hear this story.
I really don't. It wasn't my favorite thing. And he forever teased me. He said, oh, you really liked it. You threw a chair at them. And I didn't. He never let me forget it.
What was wrestling like back then? Like, how close were you?
Oh, it was so popular. And people really did get excited. Yeah, it was very popular, but we never went back to another one.
I mean, it must have been a somewhat successful first date with you getting married a few months later.
Yes, we made up our mind in a hurry.
Where was he from?
Glace Bay, Nova Scotia.
Oh, wow. What brought him over here?
Well, it was before the end of the war. And he was, I'm guessing when I say around 17, and all these young fellas wanted to, they tried to join the service. And he was turned down anyway because he only had one eye. And so then the government sent them to work in Brantford at factories that were producing things for the war. So that's how come he come to Brantford.
Oh, so that was if you wanted to be part of the war effort but couldn't be sent into battle, they could find workplaces for you
and
to support.
And they paved their way, and I'm sure that they had places available to house them when they got here. Yes.
That's amazing that all the way from Nova Scotia to Brantford of all places.
Well, they were sending to anybody that was had manufacturing plants.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's just another one of those pieces of the war effort that I haven't really heard about.
So many men went to war, they were sure to help.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense.
Yeah. Were you close in age? Like, were you a similar age around that time?
Yeah, he was 2 years older than me.
Where so you
25, 27, yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to do the math and figure out, like, you would have been still just a young teen yourself during the end of the war, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, were teenage women part of the war effort at that point? Like, did you have responsibilities because of that?
No.
No.
No. My job had nothing to do with it when I went to work.
Yeah, where did you go to work?
Where?
Yeah.
Well, it was, I went off an office work at a, they managed, manufactured these great big wooden vats that breweries or whatever use.
Okay. How did you get into that line of work?
Well, I took my last class, school was office college. And so I just went and got an office job. And it was just sort of general job.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yes. I always liked to work. So it was a job. And I was young, so I didn't know much about it.
Yeah, I
suppose. I'd be 17.
Yeah. And after you got married, did you continue to work or did you start a family or?
No, I sort of had the idea you got married and you didn't have to work. We went to live out in a village where my parents had the store. So it was usually a transportation problem. Mm-hmm. So I didn't work. And then we were married in June, and of the following, like, year, August, my first son was born. So then I was a homemaker for a long time after that.
Yeah, fair enough. How many children did you have?
Two sons.
Are they close in age?
Yes, about 2.5 years apart.
So you were back in, I'm forgetting the name of the little town where the general store was.
Onondaga, Onondaga.
Okay, I think I've seen it on a map, maybe.
Yeah.
It's not so far from here.
Yeah, it's across the Grand River from the Six Nations Reservation.
Okay.
So maybe you have an idea about that.
Yeah, my partner's family is from, like, Paris and Brantford area.
Oh, yes.
And so not
That's
too
only
far.
2 miles away. Yes.
Yeah. You may have even gone to the same high school generations apart. I would have to check. But
yeah.
What was young married life like? Like, did you have a lot of opportunities? Like, I don't know if folks got to travel or...
Very, very quiet, because you got to remember there was really no extra money to do a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Nobody went on vacation. We did buy a house in Onondaga, and I didn't really like that house, so anyhow, we got rid of it. But eventually, like, my first son was born in August, and then, like, two and a half, March, like, he was 1948, in 1951, March. Yeah, my youngest son was born. Well, he was just a baby when we bought a house in Brantford.
Okay.
So we, and I didn't work then.
Mm-hmm.
My husband worked at Massey Harris, which was a tractor building, a rim building manufacturer. I remember when my youngest son wasn't too big, I used to sell Avon, because I could just make a few dollars doing that. You can make quite a bit at that time.
Yeah.
With selling it.
Did you have a lot of competition, though? Were a lot of people selling Avon?
They used to have a district that was yours.
Oh, okay.
So didn't. You just go up and down the street.
That's a good system.
Yeah. It was good. And so I can't think when I ever did any work after that. Well, the boys got old enough that they could come home from school and I could leave something sort of prepared for dinner. And so I went to work at second AMP store opened in Brantford. It was a big new one. So I worked there on weekends part-time.
What was your job?
Cashier.
Cashier.
Yeah, and my husband was home to look after the boys, so it worked out good. And I only went to work because I wanted a new stove. So I saved every penny I made till I thought I had enough to buy a new stove. And my husband and I went shopping, and I bought the very best stove I could buy. I got a new one. I wanted it. So then it wasn't long, and I decided, oh, I don't want to be away weekends. I'd rather be home with them. So I asked the man, I talked to the manager, and said, I think that I'm going to quit. And he said, why would you want to do that? And I said, well, I bought a new stove, and that's what I come to work for. And he said, well, I'd like you to stay, and I'll try and give you hours that suit you or doing what you want to do. And I said, well, I feel bad because other people will be a little complaining about this. So he said, no, it's my business. We'll work something out. So then I thought, you know, our car isn't too good. It wouldn't be a bad job to work and save for a car. Would you believe I saved every penny and we bought a new car?
Wow.
Well, it was a while later. We had paid for it, bought it and paid for it. And then I quit.
I love your goal-oriented working. That's so brilliant.
Yep. One of the funniest stories I think that I remember about that time as far as money is concerned. My husband was bringing home $35 a week, and we paid $35 a month for our mortgage. So that was fair in those times. And anyhow, I used to put $10 in a purse, and that, believe it or not, was groceries and spending money for the week.
Wow.
And so payday was Friday. Thursday night, maybe he'd say, gee, why don't we do something? Why don't we go to the movie? I said, we can't afford to go. I haven't got any money left in the purse. He'd say, oh, I know you got money. I said, no, I spent all the $10 and we wouldn't go.
Wow.
So I'm going to sound like a tightwad.
I know that feeling, though. It's not $10 now, but there's still something to be said for living within your means.
Oh, sure. Sure. Well, you have so much more and you do so much more. There's nothing wrong with it.
No, I think it's, I'm very careful with money and very thrifty, and I love budgeting. I love that. And so I get very excited, like the idea of setting a goal for a particular purchase and then coming up with a source of income to match that is exactly how I work. I feel like I've invented new little jobs when I have those kinds of, ideas.
Yeah. And if you want to take a vacation, you plan for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. You and I sound alike.
Well, the thing with that way is then when you've set that money aside with that idea in mind, you don't feel guilty about spending it that way.
No.
I don't know how people spend money randomly without feeling a lot of guilt, because mine's very planned.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah. Did money start to be less restrictive at some point? Like, did life start to ease up a little bit?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But I was, like we were talking about, I was always such an organizer and saver and planner that, but then we had this house till we went on a vacation down to Cape Breton to his family. And at that time, my father still owned the store in Onondaga. No, he didn't own it. He had sold it, and he had a mortgage on it. Okay. And the people that had the mortgage walked out and left it.
Wow.
So he got it back, and it was had a post office, so you couldn't leave the store empty because you had to keep the post office going. So anyhow, we were going away, and they had to move in there. And they just camped, sort of. And so we said, don't do anything till we get back. We're gone 3 weeks, and maybe we'll take over the store. So that's how come we took over the store in Onondaga, the same one my father had.
Wow.
And but my husband kept his job, and the boys were going to, well, one public school, one high school. And so it became sort of my store because they were gone all day. And so then we moved to Onondaga that time.
So you moved back to Onondaga, I guess.
Yeah.
Did you have a house you liked better this time?
Oh, yes. I liked the house in Brantford.
I know you did, yeah. But you didn't like the house in...
Yes, this one's... Well, it was big. Like, it was a four-bedroom. A big, big building because it had the store at the front.
Right.
And the store had gasoline pumps. And at that time, it even had a pump for coal oil. And it had the post office. So it was a whole lot of different things. I learned to put gas in the car and oil in the engine. So we had that for 11 years.
Wow.
And then we sold it because my oldest son was off working then. And it was tied us down quite a bit. And so then we sold it then. And my husband's company in Brantford transferred him to Oakville. So we moved down there just in an apartment because we didn't know how long we were going to be there. But we were there 11 years, too.
Wow.
So, and then my husband had to retire, so we went back to Brantford because our family and friends were still there.
So. When you look back, does one of those places feel the most like home?
Well, I would say maybe the first little house we bought in Brantford because we were there as a family, and it wasn't a new house by any means, but I really liked that house. It was just comfortable. And at that time, like the boys just, they played in the neighborhood, you know, they didn't go out to do things like now. They didn't have to have all these lessons or like swimming and all this kind of thing they had to have. Mm-hmm. And we did everything we did together pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what Brantford was like back then. Was it like considered to be kind of a town or a city?
Well,
or
a city, but it was actually a manufacturing city, I would say.
Right. Kind of industrial then?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, Alexander Graham Bell lived there.
Right.
Yeah, his first phone call was to Paris. And, of course, we had Wayne Gretzky. Don't forget him. He put Brantford on the map.
You're listening to Bridging the Social Distance, a show recorded here in Guelph at CFRU as a platform for sharing stories and perspectives during the global pandemic of COVID-19. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Frances Poirier, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence.
It's funny, I don't know how much Brantford stands out when you get farther away. For me, I know a lot about Brantford, sort of, because it's pretty close by.
Oh,
you know,
I don't think it was people remembered so much about it.
Yeah. Can you tell me more about running the general store? Because it's always been one of my dormant sort of fantasies is running a general store. It's something I imagine from time to time, and I'd love to hear more about
Hours were probably about 8 to 9. And like it's no comparison today with the store. I cut my own pork chops. We had a butcher block thing and a cleaver and what have you. And we sliced meat, and there were no restrictions like there are now.
Yeah.
You know, when I think back, people didn't get sick, but it's no wonder they didn't. And it was so easy going, and they didn't put such a big point on super, super clean now, which they have to, and it's better. I'm not complaining about that. I think it's better, but, you know, I would buy a 50-pound bag of potatoes, and somebody come in, I'd just bag up 5 or 10 pounds of potatoes. It was nothing was dead ahead of time. When we buy a bushel of apples and do the same thing, and
right
there, and then the post office was in the little corner of the store, that everybody had their little nook for the mail and everything, and I made money orders and all sorts of things. I had two or three chairs in the store, and some of the old fellows around would come and sit in the morning, and they'd visit and and sit there half the morning, and just kind of chummy.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that a lot of people couldn't picture this in their mind. It was so easy.
Yeah, I'm just amazed that so many of those responsibilities were in one place. Like, when I picture that era, I picture there being a butcher and then, like, a post office.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so it's fascinating hearing of it all under one roof and one person wearing all those hats.
And we'd have little accounts that people would, I'd have my trouble too collecting money, but I usually got quite tough and I'd get my money. So it's such a new thing. Like, I'd go out in my house, the kitchen was off the store, and I'd go out there and I'd work there, and I could hear anybody coming in.
Right.
And this one fellow used to come every day, and he'd sit there, and I'd say to him, if somebody comes in and I'm not here, give me a call.
Sure.
So
yeah,
come out in the house and call for me. So it's quite, and people, I had a couple older men that couldn't, if they got a letter and they had to reply to it or something, they couldn't do it themselves. So I do it.
Aww.
Yeah. So it was kind of real friendly, like.
Yeah. So I'm trying to wrap my head around. So you would be the butcher and the post office person and the gas station attendant, and also
the groceries,
and a transcription service.
No.
Wow. I mean, it sounds so interesting, though. It sounds like each day would have, you know, it just an embedded variety.
Oh, yes. Yes. So, I was never rushed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was easy. No.
How many people were coming to utilize the store? Like, what was the population like in Onondaga?
Like, I can't even tell you. It was so small.
Oh, yeah.
There might have been, well, I think there'd be maybe 30 houses, not
wow.
very many more. They had a school there and a church. That's about it. The train brought for years, the train brought the mail. Somebody'd have to go to the station and pick it up. But then we had it delivered after that.
Wow.
They'd come in the morning and deliver the mail, and at night they'd come and pick up the mail that I had got during the day.
So were you the only kind of general store anywhere in the area?
Yes. That there's one in Middleport and one in Onondaga.
Wow. How did you manage figuring out what to keep in stock?
Well, there weren't a lot of fancy things then, so you just a general food that you could make a good meal.
Sure.
Meat and vegetables and fruit and all the flour and sugar and all that went on with it.
Like some of it would stay, it would keep okay for a while, like potatoes and stuff, but some of it, like meat, it feels like it would be a bit of a challenge to figure out.
Well, the meat was delivered once a week, so okay. I would order what I need. But when you live in a place like that, you soon get an idea about what you're going to need.
Yeah. I guess for people more used to living sort of similar lifestyles across the small town, like everyone would be cooking the same kind of meals. And
then when I went to make a meal, I'd always take meat out of there that was that needed to be used up. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I did have a deep freeze. Like if I had extra meat, I could always put a roast and stuff in there. And people knew I had them so that you could always get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. Did you like it?
Oh, yes. But after, like I said, our eldest son went off to work, and it was out of town. And then the youngest son, well, he ended up coming to university in Guelph. Hmm. It was too much for the two of us. We were tired down, and we didn't need to be. My husband had a new job. We didn't need to do that anymore, so... Mm-hmm. That's when we decided to sell.
Yeah. And that was before he got the job in Oakville?
Well, actually, that pushed us to sell.
Oh, gotcha.
And
yeah.
They wanted him to go, and I'm tied up with the store. So that's when we decided this is it.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Was it kind of, I don't know, it feels like it would maybe be a little bit sentimental, though, saying goodbye to that chapter of your life, having it gone through your parents as well.
Oh, yes, we liked it there, and we knew Onondaga for so long that we, mm-hmm. yes, we did like it there.
What was Oakville like at that point? Was it a big city?
Oh, I loved Oakville.
Oh, yeah.
We just got an apartment because we didn't know how long this was going to last, and we never did buy because... apartment rents were so cheap then, and we had a nice big one, and we're really comfortable. So, but my parents were still in Brantford, in their own home. So, both we were forever coming to Brantford, and at the time, well, then he had to retire. So then we thought, well, Brantford's the place for us. We'll just go back. So we bought a place there. But it was Oakville was so close to Toronto, and so really close to Brantford. That's why we liked it so well. We liked the place, and then it was all we. And my husband bought season tickets to the hockey games. I didn't go too often, but there was always somebody wanted to go with them at that time. They were, but do you want to hear the story on the tickets?
Yes.
These tickets, when he bought them, were, and now he had the blue line, both the first or second row and the grays. You could see perfectly. $4 a ticket.
Wow.
Then we found a place to park in Toronto, right near the gardens. It was underground. It was $1 a time. So it was great. You could go in the winter, park underground.
Yeah.
$1 for parking.
Which is probably like $30 now. For the same kind of parking spot.
Oh, we've often laughed about that because $4 a ticket, you know.
Wow.
It's hard for somebody to believe that.
Well, I'm trying to wrap my head around even just in the time from when you're describing your early marriage and having $10 a week for groceries. then $4 sounds like a lot. But if I fast forward to your days in Oakville, lots of time had gone by. So I imagine $4 was cheap again, you know, comparatively. But
it was. It was. And there was all they had. Oakville Place was opened up. The wasn't theater. It was a place where they had plays and stuff. A beautiful place. And I remember we bought season's tickets for that, too. The two of us went for the season for $70. Can you imagine?
That sounds like such a nice lifestyle to live.
Well, it was good. You know, yeah. We had no responsibilities then, and there was enough to do.
You know. Yeah. So, for comparison, during that era, with the $70 season tickets to Oakville Place and the $4 hockey games, how much do you think, like, a week of groceries? Well, then you're also not buying for a whole family. It'd be just the two of you. So that's maybe different, too. But, you know, to give me an idea of, like, how much.
I really don't have an idea.
Yeah.
But it couldn't have been very much. Like, I would think if I spent $20, I probably spent a lot.
Wow. Even
I'm just guessing at that. But when you think about it, everything was relevant.
Yeah. Well, you were born, if you're 92 now, 1928? Is that right?
27.
27, okay. So
My birthday is November. I'll be 93 in November.
Wow. My grandmother just turned 90 a couple days ago. So I have a sort of general reference point for the era. But that means your childhood was born out of the Depression, right?
Yes, and I don't really remember the Depression as such. Because we lived on a farm. We had lots to eat. And people weren't running around spending money on movies and plays and all sort of trips and stuff. But the only thing I can remember is my mother and father having to save really hard to pay their mortgage. And right. and I can remember my parents saying, we don't even have 25 cents.
Wow.
So that's how hard times were then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you're people of your age don't necessarily, I guess, remember the Depression, but your whole life would have been shaped by, you know, the outcomes of it.
Well, it happened shortly afterwards, so no wonder they didn't have any money.
Yeah. I feel like it probably took a really long time for things to recover, too.
Well, it took the war.
Right.
The next war.
Yeah. Was there, like, a really distinct period on the other side of the war that you remember where life looked so different as a teenager?
Well, that's about the time I was getting married.
I suppose. So life looked very different.
Yeah. If you had $100, it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just gradually got better. That's all.
Yeah, it's kind of neat to think of an era where everybody would have been in a similar boat. Like, you know, it'd be one thing if you were living through a depression, but you saw other people having these luxuries and stuff. But when everybody is scaled back, it's not.
As far as I remember, everybody was just about the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't ever remember thinking, oh, they got a lot of money or anything. I never remember thinking.
Yeah.
My grandparents weren't well off, but maybe they were the better, had more than anybody I knew, because my grandfather was he had brothers that were very, invented things. Oh. And he was sort of it like that too, but he had the farm. But they had a big milk herd and sold cream and then they had pigs. And then he, had a chopping mill, and all the farmers brought their grain there and had it chopped up. Mm-hmm. And and then he had a thrashing machine, which he went out and did custom work for other people. He did his own, and then he got paid to do theirs. So I would say they were one of the ones that had the most, really. But you would never know it. They didn't spend it, but they had it. They were, and they were good to us. So
yeah, it's neat because again, Nick, you know that family closer because of your relationship with your uncle,
and they never give you anything really outright.
Right.
They give us meat, or they give us vegetables, and they had fruit that we always got our share of that. But no one ever passed out money, like sometimes would happen.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I guess everyone was like probably being very careful, right? Like even if they were in a good position, it could change so easily.
Oh, everybody was.
Yeah.
Yeah, just everybody.
What kinds of inventions were your grandfather's brothers coming up with?
My grandma. Oh, they were involved in the first hydroelectric plants in Ontario.
Whoa.
And I can't really attest to any of this story, but my remembrance was that they sold their hydroelectric plants to Ontario Hydro.
Wow.
One of them was in Blind River, and the other was in Whitefish Falls.
Hmm.
So they were really smart men. And
yeah.
My grandfather was too, because they had a natural gas well on their farm. So, and there wasn't too many people had that, just a normal farmer. And at the end of the First World War, I think it was 1918. What am I thinking? I don't know what is that, but I think it was around then. He built a beautiful big brick house. It was like two stories and the attic was finished. This
wow.
great big house. And because he had this gas well, to start with, the downstairs, my grandmother had a kitchen, which would be like a normal kitchen, not a big one, but a normal kitchen. She had a pantry. She had all the flour bins and bread bins and everything built in. She had in the pantry, she had a sink with running water.
Wow.
And she had a gas cook stove. And they had a gas furnace. And what else? Oh, she had a washing machine. He hooked up a motor on it, so she had a proper washing machine. And then upstairs, they had four big bedrooms. And they had a bathroom with bathtub, toilet, running water, and everything in it.
Wow.
And then the attic was as big as the upstairs. And it had a proper floor on it. And he built a tank up, and had a holding tank up in the attic. And when it rained, the water went in there. And that's what the water was for the bathroom.
Oh.
He'd have it in his tank. So, he had everything going for him. And they had, I remember they had two rooms with the sliding big doors from the dining room and living room, very big sliding doors into the wall. Nobody had a house like that at that time.
That's incredible.
And it's still there and it's still lived in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so amazing. That's really not something I can imagine from that era.
But he had two sons, and neither one of them were inclined to invent anything. They had jobs and made a living, but anyhow. But so.
Well, how did you end up moving, from your Oakville days and then Brantford? How did you end up back, or I guess not back, but how did you end up in Guelph?
Well, I'm... Last November, I decided that my family here in Guelph, and I was getting to an age. They didn't come often, and I didn't have to call them an emergency. But when they did come, it was to Brantford, which is an hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting older, and you got to remember that tomorrow could change everything. And I got thinking, now, what if I got sick? And if I was in the hospital, they'd think they had to, somebody had to come to see me every day to make sure I was all right. And they got this trip and the trip back. And I thought, I had a condo, which I loved, and I was still managing it all on my own. The only thing I had was a cleaning lady. And I had a car, and I would go to the bank and the grocery store and the drugstore. But all of a sudden, I thought, maybe I wasn't being fair to everybody. So I said to my son here in Guelph, I said, maybe you'd like to take me around someday to look at some places. No decision was made or anything, but I said, let's go and look. So I think it was November, we put our name in here.
Okay.
And I just thought it's kind of time, because he's retired, but the two granddaughters are working. They didn't have time to be running to me. So that's how come I'm here.
That's a really, I think my grandmother has been, you know, doing similar research in it. And it strikes me as an incredibly, I guess, a really thoughtful gesture or move on your part. It must be extremely difficult to, you know, pick the day or pick the time that feels like,
that really doesn't bother me. I'm not that kind of a person. I don't think about those things.
No.
If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. But, and like I said, somebody said, are you glad you moved? I said, don't you ever kid yourself. I didn't want to leave that condo, but it was time I left it.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that it was the right move.
So. Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, it would have been very different living through a global pandemic in Brantford.
Well, that
alone
was the
too,
worst
right?
thing that happened to me. I moved 18th of April, right when it was beginning to be at the worst.
Oh, no. Oh, because you had your name in November, but that's
and
when
here
it was.
I am. I moved to Guelph, and I'm stuck in it's a studio one, and I'm happy with the room.
Yeah.
But here I come. From Brantford one day and stick me in here, and I can't even see anybody.
Right.
You know, I'm quarantined. They could come up on the. I've got a beautiful room. It's got a good size window and a door that I can open into the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And the gazebo's right across from me. And they could come up the sidewalk and, you know, use the phone, but that's not like talking to them.
No.
And, if the day comes, we can ever do, they can walk in here, I'll be happy. But, and I can go out in the garden. There's several sidewalks here and the fish pond and what have you. I can go out there and walk. So I try to go out every day and walk around. So it could be worse, but it's just waiting for that day. And my great granddaughter, she thought I was moving to Guelph, and I've been close with her. She thought I was moving to Guelph, and she was going to be able to run over and see me, and she minded that.
Yeah.
But anyhow, we'll hope the day comes.
I mean, you're in a facility at least that has kept everybody very safe. So I feel like those days are coming. They're coming.
Absolutely.
But I feel for you. That's a really challenging situation to find yourself in.
Especially when, you know, like I couldn't even go out to go to the dining room. I was stuck here for 2 weeks, you know.
Oh,
and
man.
It just seems like, why did I leave where I was doing? But then it would have got harder there.
It would have. That's what I was picturing. Like you're putting your family would have had to make really difficult decisions too about whether or not it was safe or unsafe to be visiting.
I was lucky. I had a few people who call me and say, "Do you need something?" And I could tell them, "Oh, I do need something." So they'd get it and bring it to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I still could go out. But then they didn't want me going out because they were afraid I was going to get something. So,
yeah.
Well, here we are. We're here to stay.
I really feel super sympathetic to those of you who are inside the facility, though I'm glad that there's support and safety in it, at least, you know?
Yes. We can go out now. Mm-hmm. Our family can take us out, but I don't want to go shop and I don't need anything. They can get it if I need it. So why would I go out and take a chance on it? And a couple Saturdays ago, they all got together and I went, and we had a barbecue and I went out that day, but that's the only day I've gone out. So I got a doctor's appointment in Dundas in a couple weeks' time, and I'm going out. I'm going there. So, but it'll come. Surely it'll come soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You've generally felt pretty well supported during this time, though?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. The girls are marvelous in here. They're so kind, and all you got to do is say, "I need something," and you got it.
Yeah.
And, they're very kind. And Bryce has been really trying to be helpful by getting me into this.
Yeah. I've appreciated having people working there who are taking it upon themselves to find, because it works for me as well. I have been coming to Riverside Glen for years to talk to people for radio, and then I wasn't allowed in either. So this is a really nice version to be possible.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you got to look for what good things you have.
Well, that's a good segue. We're getting close to the hour, so I should wrap it. But there is a question that I enjoy asking people, which is like, if there is something like a silver lining or something positive you've seen emerge during this time, even though it's obviously been very challenging. But is there something that you've seen that has been kind of a bright spot in spite of the circumstances?
Well, at least I'm in Guelph. They phone me regular. Mm-hmm. They're trying to keep us busy in here because they're limited to what they can have for entertainment and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying hard to have a variety of things. And the girls are good. Like, I have trouble with arthritis in my left leg. And yesterday they did the pole walking outside. So all of a sudden, one of the girls comes in the door. She said, go on pole walking with me. I had no way I'd never make it. But they try to keep up the things and see that you get out. And I do go to some things. Naturally, we're not going to like everything. But like this afternoon, they're having Trivial Pursuit. And I haven't been to it, but I am going this afternoon. So
awesome.
It's what you do yourself, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to sit. And I had trouble with my TV the other day, and Bryce tried to fix it, and it didn't. Then finally the maintenance man come, and he fixed it all up. So there I was good to go again. So is that what – that help you at all?
Yeah, I think it's kind of neat. It's like you're going back to – making your own fun again, kind of. It's like kind of circling back to the early days when you were restricted with what you had access to, and you found a way to have fun in spite of it.
And the meals are good, and the girls in the dining room, well, if you want to change or you don't like this, they get you something else, and you always have lots to eat. So,
yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
Not too much to complain about.
Well, I guess I should wrap it up, but I hope things free up soon. I hope your move to be closer to your family is something you get to have more experience with soon. Yeah. I feel like we're getting there. We're working hard to keep it safe.
Well, thank you very much for taking
the time. Oh, thank you. Yeah, you too. It was so wonderful. When I'm allowed to come back in person, I'll come say a hello in real life too.
Okay, that would be good.
Okay. Yeah. Well, bye. Thank you.
Bye.
So once again, that was Frances Poirier, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. That brings us to the end of this episode of Bridging the Social Distance, a show produced at CFRU in Guelph and syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario, that aims to create a platform for us sharing what we are doing to get through this time together in the wake of COVID-19.
You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM, broadcasting across Hamilton from the edge of the Niagara Escarpment.